We have had the opportunity over the course of time to study occasionally some of the nations of the Old Testament, and particularly their relationship or how it ties into the history of God's people in Israel, how God would use those neighbors, enemies of Israel, to punish them when they went astray, and also how he judged the wickedness of those other nations. And some months ago, we studied about the nation of Edom. And recently, we completed a study about the Philistines, which was a rather lengthy one, probably more so than with any of the other nations that we would study, given the amount of material that's in the scriptures about the Philistines and their very close relationship with Israel, and how often they were in conflict with them, which was the nature of our recent study about that. We saw that they ultimately were given the punishment by God of utter destruction for all of their history of wickedness. Tonight, we want to examine in a study, or at least probably tonight and Lord willing next week. It's probably going to take a couple of them. But anyway, the Amalekites. One of those Old Testament nations that were a very near neighbor to Israel. Now, they did not have the prominence as far as numbers or number of times that they interacted with Israel to the degree that the Philistines did. But the Amalekites, they were on the same, in the same region of the Philistines, that being on the west side of Israel's territory. Israel had a number of nations. If I had a projector or something or a map over here, we could look at that and see that. I encourage any of you to look at a Bible map that would have those territories. But we know that Israel, the shape of the nation was very lengthy north to south and not very wide in comparison to its length from east to west. But the territory of Israel was bounded by the Mediterranean Sea on the west, and that's where it should have been. The Philistines were along that Mediterranean coast in the southern part of next to Israel in its southern part, which was bordering the territory of Judah primarily. Well, the Amalekites were south of the Philistines. They were really a nomadic people, as we read about them, that dwelt in some very dry regions that was below or south of where the Philistines' territory was, so they weren't in conjunction with the Mediterranean coast directly. They were near there, near the Philistines' territory, but they were in that very southern region in proximity to Judah and the children of Simeon, who had their cities among the tribe of Judah. So they are the main ones that interacted with the Amalekites. However, the entire nation of Israel did on some notable occasions that we want to look into. And particularly, this is a worthwhile study to see the judgment of God, as there's a parallel between the judgment that God gave to the Amalekites with what he did to the Amorite people as a whole, those nations that inhabited the land of Canaan. And we'll look into that in more detail through this study also, Lord willing. Now, when we start with the origin of the nation, as we like to do when we look at these, in Genesis chapter 36, verses 9 through 12, we learn who Amalek, the individual, was, which is identified as the father of this nation, and we see that it's an offshoot of Edom. And so in Genesis 36, 9 through 12, it says, "And these are the generations of Esau. the father of the Edomites, in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, the son of Ada, the wife of Esau, Reuel, the son of Bashemath, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were Teman, Omar, Zepho, and Gadam, and Kenaz. And Timna was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bare to Eliphaz Amalek. These were the sons of Ada, Esau's wife. So here we see that Amalek, the individual, was actually the grandson of Esau. His grandson by the concubine of his son. So he was not, it did not become part of the Edomite nation. He actually became, Amalek became the father of his own. In Genesis 36, 15 and 16, it also mentions these same ones. These were dukes of the sons of Esau, the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn son of Esau, Duke Teman, Duke Omar, Duke Zepho, Duke Kenaz, Duke Korah, Duke Gadam, and Duke Amalek. These are the dukes that came of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These were the sons of Ada. We see that also repeated in this information in 1 Chronicles chapter 1, verses 35 and 36. 1 Chronicles 1, 35 and 36 says, "The sons of Esau, Eliphaz, Reuel, and Jeush, and Jalem and Korah, the sons of Eliphaz, Teman and Omar, Zephon, Gadam, Kenaz, and Timna, and Amalek." Those accounts from Genesis 36 and 1 Chronicles 1, we see Amalek being the grandson of Esau and the father of the nation of the Amalekites. Now, the actual first mention of the Amalekites in the Bible is in Genesis 14. That can be a little bit confusing since we read about Amalek, the individual, in Genesis 36 being the grandson of Esau. So Genesis 14 would be way before that chronologically. This goes back to Genesis 14 to the days of Abraham, who, of course, was Esau's grandfather. But in Genesis 14, and this is the chapter that records the battle with five kings against another group of kings, and eventually Lot was taken, and Abraham became involved to rescue Lot, which he did as God gave him the victory to do that. That's also when Melchizedek makes an appearance. So Genesis 14 is an interesting chapter, not a long one, but full of very interesting and important information. But in the midst of this, let's look at the first seven verses. Genesis 14, 1 to 7, says, "It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Eleazar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboam, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. And these were joined together in the vale of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote the Rephaims in Ashtaroth Carnaim, and the Zuzims in Ham, and the Immims in Sheva Kiriathaim, and the Horites in their Mount Seir unto Elparan, which is by the wilderness. And they returned and came to Enmishvat, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites that dwelt in Hazes on Tamar." Now that makes it a little bit confusing. So we need to keep in mind, though, when it says it smote all the country, the Amalekites, is that a statement that they were in there at the time? Or is that identifying the area that eventually was occupied by the Amalekites that would be easily identifiable in the minds of the Israelites, or those who would have read these things from the outset? Well, We can't say with certainty there, but it's but there is a mention of that country and that region that belonged to the Amalekites. Yet we don't see Amalek or Amalekites involved in the actual fight itself in this area. So that's a further indication that this is not speaking about another nation by the same name, although I'm not going to exclude that possibility. But the Amalekites that we read about and know of in the area near where the children of Israel came to dwell in Canaan, these Amalekites were we read where they had their origin from Esau in Genesis 36 and 1 Chronicles 1. In the book of Numbers in chapter 13, when the spies went into the land of Canaan, and it describes the different nations that were dwelling in that area at that time, Numbers chapter 13, 26 to 29 says, "And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover we saw the children of Anak there." Those were the giants. "The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan." So they're the different nations and their territory. And as it says, the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. So that was the most southern of the people that were in that, in proximity to the land where the children of Israel would go. And to enter that land would bring them into conflict with the Amalekites, because the region that they where they dwelt included territory that would eventually be given by lot to the tribe of Judah, particularly. There was inevitable. It was inevitable that there was going to be conflict between the children of Israel and the Amalekites. But that conflict didn't begin at the time in which the children of Israel actually entered into the land of Canaan. I mean, that's when the fight started with most of those Canaanite nations. But not with the Amalekites. The conflict between Israel and Amalek actually predated that by quite a bit. We would say 40 years in that neighborhood, because in Exodus chapter 17, in verses 8 through 16, the Amalekites attacked the Israelites as they had left Egypt and as they were coming through the wilderness. They attacked the moving column of the nation of Israel and preyed upon the ones that were their most feeble and showed great cruelty to Israel in taking advantage of this situation. Let's read it from Exodus chapter 17, verses 8 through 16, as this records the first direct interaction between the Israelites and the Amalekites. It says, "Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, Choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, Write this for a memorial in a book and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. For he said, Because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So this was the battle that was actually fought there at this time. And I think we all remember reading about this with Moses holding his arms up. And what would happen if we tried to hold our arms up all day? I mean, eventually anybody's going to get tired and the arms are going to start falling because of inability of the muscles to be able to continue to hold them up all for that length of time. And so that's why Aaron and Hur got on each side of Aaron and held up his arms so that they so he could have his arms lifted up, because the Lord was giving Israel victory over Amalek when Moses' arms were raised. And so that was the battle there. And it started here, though, with that when it says Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. We have some more details about that in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 17 through 19. Deuteronomy 25, 17 through 19. What was it about this battle that we're reading about in Exodus 17 that caused God to swear this oath that he was going to have war with Amalek from generation to generation, and that he would utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven? I mean, God pronounced a great judgment on Amalek at that time. Now, did God say he was going to do it right then? Well, no, he even mentioned there that he was going to, there was going to be war from God upon them from generation to generation. So there were going to be many generations before all of what God promised of that judgment of utter destruction on Amalek would fully come to pass. And it did take many years, many generations. What nation has a chance when God says, I'm going to war with them from generation to generation, and then put out their remembrance from under heaven? I mean, there was no good reason to be an Amalekite from that point. But in Deuteronomy 25, 17 through 19, we learn a bit more about what caused God to pronounce that judgment. He says, remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way when you were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Thou shalt not forget it. So when it said in Exodus 17 that Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim, well, did they come to fight their mightiest men in a battle? Well, Israel ended up fighting a battle, but what started it? Well, as he says there, while they were going along in the way, and what would happen any time you've got a family, multiple families in this case, multiplied to the point of being an entire nation. What happens? Well, anyone that's part of a large family has been part of a large family, and that includes several of us in here. If you're all together someplace and there's some space and you're out walking, I mean, eventually you kind of string out into a column, and who's going to be eventually over time, who's going to be in the back? It's going to be the littlest ones, the mothers that are taking care of the little ones, and the older people. The ones who are the weakest, the smallest, or the oldest are going to be the ones that are going to end up naturally being towards the back of the line and the column. Well, so when the Amalekites, when they saw or knew of Israel's coming along in that column, then they decided to attack, and they attacked there in the back of their column to attack the most feeble of the members of their nation when they were faint and weary. So here they were tired in their journey, and they come upon them at that time when they were physically at their weakest and lowest point. And then of their number, they attack the ones who are the most feeble of them to start with. So they showed great cruelty in what they did there. And was there any provocation on Israel's part against Amalek at that time? No. They were taking advantage of the situation to try to do harm to them for their own gain. So also in Numbers chapter 24 and verse 20, the situation is mentioned in terms of what God had pronounced as his judgment against Amalek. And this is what God inspired through Balaam. At the time when Balaam had been hired by the king of Moab to curse Israel, and of course God turned that into blessings, and God inspired his word through Balaam, contrary to what Balaam's desire was to do and what he'd been hired to do. But as part of that, in Numbers 24, verse 20, it says, "And when he looked on Amalek, he took up his parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations, but his latter end shall be that he perish forever." Now, the first of the nations, that doesn't mean first in... when he talks about first, it doesn't always mean first chronologically. It can be also first in terms of prominence for some reason. Well, Amalek was not the first among the nations chronologically, but what gave them a leading position among the nations? They would be ranked number one as what? Well, as a nation that God appointed for destruction here. So his latter end would be that he would perish forever. So we see it mentioned in Exodus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, that judgment that God pronounced on Amalek that was going to come not immediately, but it was going to come in the future. And between this point that we're reading about when the Israelites were in the wilderness, between then and whatever point God was going to bring that final judgment and utter destruction on the Amalekites, he was going to be afflicting them, warring against them from generation to generation. Now, let's read about some of the other occasions that are in the scriptures where the Amalekites were fighting against and causing trouble for the children of Israel. One of them is in Numbers chapter 14. Now, in Exodus, it was an unprovoked attack by Amalek against Israel. In Numbers chapter 14, we read about the Israelites coming up and fighting a battle with Amalek that they lose. But the circumstances or the background for that battle that we read about in Numbers chapter 14, well, we already saw a glimpse of Numbers 13 a little bit ago when it described when the spies went into Canaan and they were describing the different nations and where they dwelt. And they mentioned the Amalekites that dwelt in the south. Those spies were in the land of Canaan 40 days in Numbers chapter 13. They returned and gave their report. Now, as they were giving that report, there became a division between two of them and the other 10 of those 12 spies, one from each of the tribes. Joshua and Caleb, they gave a good report in that as they testified about who was there and their of those nations and the fruit of the land, they said, "Let us go up," because God had promised to give them that land. They were ready to go. They believed God's promise, and they were ready to go obey the Lord to go to possess that land with their faith that God was going to deliver it into their hands as he had promised, all the way back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But the other 10 spies did not believe, and they discouraged the hearts of the people and said that the people were too great and strong, their cities and all of that. And so then the people were ready to appoint a captain to take them back to Egypt. And they were ready to stone Joshua and Caleb. At that time, God made the determination He said that was enough. They had tempted him those 10 times. In Numbers chapter 14 is a long chapter that is principally about God's decision to not allow that generation of the children of Israel to enter the land of Canaan. But he said that their children, whom they were saying would be a prey in the wilderness, they would be the ones to go into Canaan to inherit it, along with Joshua and Caleb, that God rewarded. But the others, he said they were going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. He was sentencing them a year for each of the days the spies were in Canaan until they that generation passed away and would be gone. They were not going to enter the land of Canaan. So that's what's recorded in Numbers 14. But after that was spoken to into the ears of the people by Moses, Numbers chapter 14, verses 40 through 45 records the response that the people had then. It says, "And they rose up early in the morning and gat them up into the top of the mountain, saying, Lo, we be here, and will go up unto the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. And Moses said, Wherefore now do you transgress the commandment of the Lord? But it shall not prosper. Go not up, for the Lord is not among you, that you be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword, because you are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up unto the hilltop. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwelt in that hill, and smote them, and discomfited them, even unto Hormah." So they went, they said, okay, well, we've sinned, but now we're going to go fight. But God didn't authorize this fight, in fact, forbade it. And they went up in spite of that, and God was not with them. They still didn't understand the whole point of it. Why was Joshua and Caleb, why were they so confident that they could defeat all of those nations in Canaan? Because God had promised them that. And if they obeyed them, God promised that he would stand before them when they fought their enemies, and their enemies would fall before them. So they believed that promise of God. Now, in this case, the children of Israel had disbelieved that promise, and then when they were punished by God for it, now they're saying, oh, well, we're going to go fight. But now they're going to fight without the Lord. So they didn't believe that they would have victory with the Lord. Now they go and fight without him, and they face certain defeat, didn't they? And Moses warned them, if you go up, God's not with you, and you're going to fall. They went up anyway, and they fell. So they added sin to sin. They disobeyed God again. And lost this battle that included the Amalekites. So there we read another time in which there was a battle between Israel and Amalek. In the book of Judges, in chapter 3, verses 12 and 13, when the children of Israel on this occasion did evil, and the Lord raised up enemies against them, it included the Amalekites. Judges 3, 12 and 13 says, "And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And he gathered unto him the children of Ammon and Amalek, and went and smote Israel, and possessed the city of palm trees." The city of palm trees is Jericho. And so Moab was the leader here, but he had a confederation with their near neighbor, Ammon, which was not just their near neighbor, but also their cousins. Those were the two nations that descended from Lot, Abraham's nephew, Moab and Ammon. But they also had Amalekites to join in with this. And so God used the Amalekites led by Moab and along with Ammon, to punish Israel for their turning away from the Lord at that time, under that generation. And the Lord raised up Ehud then and gave him victory over Moab when the children of Israel repented. That's in Judges 3. Now in Judges chapter 6, there's another generation of the children of Israel that turned away from the Lord. It says in starting in verse 1 of Judges 6, and the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was when Israel had sown that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites and the children of the east, even they came up against them. And they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth till thou come into Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude. For both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. But who does it say was with the Midianites, joined with them in that? Well, we can see the Amalekites, they were not a very numerous people, so we don't read about them as a large nation on their own, fighting battles with Israel. We read about these skirmishes very often. They're joined with other enemies of Israel. But God used them on those two occasions there in Judges 3 and then in Judges 6 as part of the punishment of Israel when they turned away from him. But now when that generation repents, who does God raise up to as a judge to deliver them this time? Well, it's Gideon. In verses 33 through 35 of Judges chapter 6, it says, "Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and Abiezer was gathered after him." That's his hometown. "And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also was gathered after him. And he sent messengers unto Asher and unto Zebulun and unto Naphtali, and they came up to meet them." Then in chapter 7, he is gathering his army, starting in verse 9. It says, "It came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him," to Gideon, "Arise, get thee down into the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. But if thou fear to go down, go thou with Phurah thy servant to go down to the host, and thou shalt hear what they say. And afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down into the host." Then he went down with Phurah his servant unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and their camels were without number as the sand by the seaside for multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow and said, "Behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian and came into a tent and smote it that it fell and overturned it, and the tent lay along and his fellow answered and said, "This is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host." And it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof that he worshipped and returned unto the host of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian." And so then he divided his army and went and fought, and they defeated the Midianites, but as they did, and that carries down all the way down through verse 25. But when Gideon was given that great victory over the Midianites, I mean, who also did he prevail against that were with the Midianites that it mentions there three different times? Well, the Amalekites were there too. So they were defeated by Gideon at that time, as they had been when they joined with Moab and Ammon, when Ehud defeated them. And in Judges chapter 10, here comes another generation that's turned away from the Lord. And in Judges 10, 6 through 14, it says, "The children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam and Ashtaroth and the gods of Syria and the gods of Sidon and the gods of Moab and the gods of the children of Ammon and the gods of the Philistines." They didn't leave any out, did they? "And forsook the Lord and served not him. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the children of Ammon. And that year they vexed and oppressed the children of Israel 18 years. All the children of Israel that were on the other side Jordan in the land of the Amorites, which is in Gilead, Moreover, the children of Ammon passed over Jordan to fight against Judah and against Benjamin and against the house of Ephraim, so that Israel was sore distressed. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, saying, "We've sinned against thee, both because we have forsaken our God and also served Balaam." And the Lord said unto the children of Israel, "Did not I deliver you from the Egyptians and from the Amorites and from the children of Ammon and from the Philistines, the Zidonians also, and the Amalekites and the Maonites did oppress you? And you cried unto me, and I delivered you out of their hand. Yet ye have forsaken me and served other gods. Therefore I will deliver you no more. Go and cry unto the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you in the time of your tribulation." So when God is, as we can see, is very fed up with the children of Israel for this repeated rebellion. But then he's mentioning all these times that he saved them before. And he includes in there the saving them from the Amalekites, which we saw was on more than one occasion. In 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 47 through 48, as we move forward in time now to the time of King Saul, it says, "And so Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab and against the children of Ammon and against Edom and against the kings of Zobah and against the Philistines. And whithersoever he turned himself, he vexed them. And he gathered a host and smote the Amalekites and delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled them." And so God was giving victories to King Saul, and it included the Amalekites. So there were some more battles there. But this will bring us to the point now where next Sunday night, Lord willing, we want to focus in on the destruction of the Amalekites as God would fulfill finally what he had pronounced back in Exodus chapter 17 that we also read there in Numbers chapter 24 and Deuteronomy chapter 25 when he said he was going to put out the remembrance of the Amalekites from under heaven, as he was going to utterly destroy them. So he has been fighting against them from generation to generation, as we have seen through the period of the judges and all the way up to King Saul. But now he's going to bring that utter destruction upon the Amalekites. And we'll pick it up there in our study, Lord willing, next Sunday night. This is an opportunity for you, if you're here and not yet a Christian, if you need to be baptized in the name of Christ for the remission of your sins. We're encouraging you tonight to repent and be baptized in his name so that your sins can be washed away and you can have your name written in heaven, have hope of eternal life, and become a part of his eternal kingdom, his church. If you are a member of the Lord's body but you've gone astray from the Lord and need to come back to him tonight, this is an opportunity for you also. So anyone that needs to respond to the Lord's invitation tonight, please come forward now while we stand together and sing.